If you want a title, you just write down the Passover plot. Because we just uncovered something which is rather interesting. I want to read you a short section from Lesson 25 of the Correspondence Course, which is the one on the Passover, which, if you've got the time, it would be a good thing to go over at this time of the year, because Passover is not very far away. And we made a little discovery here, which is quite amazing. It just goes to show that no matter how much care we take, there's always something slips through the net. I want to read, first of all, the part of the lesson that's where the problem is. And then I want to show you how subtle Satan has been. So lesson 25, it starts on page 17, talking about Christ's crucifixion. It says, "Crucifixion was the most shameful, the most painful form of execution. Not only were spikes driven into the hands and feet of the body suspended from those open wounds, but breathing was also agonizingly difficult. Victims would sometimes struggle on their crosses for as long as 3 days, suffering pain, sunstroke, heat exhaustion, loss of blood, and finally dying from muscle exhaustion and suffocation. Our Savior suffered an incredibly painful, brutal death, and he did this voluntarily. He did it for us, and he did it for the whole world." Now, the comment here that they make is, through his beating, scourging, and crucifixion, Jesus Christ paid the penalty for our physical sins, transgressions of God's law of health, which are the cause of all sickness. And it quotes Matthew 9, verses 1 to 7. "He suffered so that we, through faith in his body that was beaten for us, may be forgiven all our physical sins, the healing of our bodies when we are sick, in addition to being forgiven our spiritual sins, the breaking of God's spiritual laws through his shed blood." But that makes it quite clear as to the meaning of the two symbols. "This is why Jesus instituted the breaking of unleavened bread as part of the New Testament Passover service. It is the symbol of his broken flesh to remind us that it is by his stripes we are healed." So that's right down the line. Now, if we go to the test that originally came with this correspondence course, there are two questions here, question 16 and question 17. And I'm going to show you how wonderfully easy it is by omitting one word, changing another word, and that's it. And the whole meaning is changed. Right? This is the test question that came with the actual original lesson. Question 16, "Jesus suffered his excruciating torture," and then it gives you the usual four answers, "so that he could pay the penalty for physical sins for all humanity," which of course is the correct answer. "So that he could pay the penalty of physical sins for all humanity." Let's put that on the hard drive for a minute. We then go to question 17. Question 17 is, "Through faith in Jesus' broken body, symbolized by broken unleavened bread in the Testament, the New Testament Passover service, Christians," and then the answer being C, "may be forgiven their physical sins, their transgressions of God's laws of physical and mental health, the primary cause of sickness and disease," which is what Mr. Bowles has been going through for the last several weeks. No problem then. Well, yes, there is a problem, because that was printed along with the original lesson, which was printed in 1986 in February, which means that the whole thing was sorted, cut and dried, and in the mill to get printed before Mr. Armstrong died. And I may say this, if anybody wants to set dates, there's one date you need to set, and that is January 1986. Any material that you get, any material you read on the internet, check the date. If it's after that date, well, you know what to do with it. It's suspect. Now, 18 months after Mr. Armstrong's death, June 1987, they reprinted the questions. Now, when we put the correspondence course up, it was checked by at least two people. But we never thought to check the questions. Well, the questions go with it, doesn't it? No, check the printing date, as Mr. Bowles pointed out to me. It's 8706, June 1987, 18 months later. Now, remember what it said in question 16? The question is, Jesus suffered his excruciating torture so that he could pay the penalty of physical sins for all humanity. The new version. Jesus suffered his excruciating torture and death so that he could pay the penalty of sins of all humanity. Not very subtle, is it? It's death. He didn't die of the torture. He died because somebody stuck a dirty great big spear and literally disemboweled him. And it was the blood and the water that gushed out, representing the second symbol. They just added and death. We go to question 17. And lo and behold, question 17 is totally rewritten. And we've been through this whole test. And apart from one very minor thing towards the end where they left out the word bottomless when it comes to the bottomless pit, they just said the pit, which is probably a translation problem using a different version of the Bible. These are the only alterations on the thing apart from the date of printing. I'm going to read question 17 in its entirety. By partaking of the unleavened bread at the Passover service, true Christians, and here's the choice you've got, symbolize Jesus' shed blood for the remission or forgiveness of sins, demonstrate a lack of commitment to God and his way of life, renew their commitment to be willing to partake of Christ's sufferings, to suffer as a Christian for righteousness' sake, or they are reminded that everyone is called now to be part of the body of Christ. Now, the answer you're supposed to take is number one. Symbolizes by partaking of the unleavened bread at the Passover service, true Christians do this because it symbolizes Jesus' shed blood for the remission or forgiveness of sin. They've taken the word physical out. This is very personal to me on several counts. I've moved churches on two occasions because of this sort of thing. Right about the time when all this was going on, I had a stroke. And I was about as close to exiting the mortal coil as it's possible to get and to still stay around. And we phoned, and we phoned, and we phoned. And eventually I got a little local elder who lived away out of town who came round at about 10 o'clock at night so nobody would see him to anoint me. The pastor, deputy pastor, several local elders. No, if you don't do that now, you go to a doctor. Several groups out there today still do this. The emphasis is all on the blood. It should be obvious there are two symbols. Who set the symbols up? Jesus Christ. Would he bother having two if he could have done it with one? They're separate. They have a different meaning. And the one thing is, he wants to drive home to us just what's at stake. What he went through, and frankly, no ordinary man could have gone through that beating and stayed conscious. It's totally incredible. And the Bible said he doesn't even resemble a man. Horrendous. But he wanted to show us what he went through so that we can go to him in faith. And as a minister, you can anoint somebody. You can ask God to intervene, and you see the intervention because you believe it. You have faith in that sacrifice. And if you think about Passover, we're told to examine ourselves, and we all stop there. What does the next bit say? To see whether you are in the faith. That's the key. And the first thing Satan went for is this thing with the Passover and the bread. And it goes right back into, was it 300 odd, when the Catholic Church was just getting underway. It was all to do with Passover. Passover linked to when they said Christ was resurrected and to which day was the Sabbath. It all centers on this first holy day season, which we're about to come upon very quickly. So while this lesson was printed in February 1986, the test was reprinted in June 87, and the question is, why? Why reprint the test? So there you have it. The reason they reprinted the test was so that they could insert a little bit in there that if somebody raised a question, they could then bring the test up and say, well, there's the answer to the thing. And if anybody wanted to query it, I was actually told, we've just grown in grace and knowledge. They reprinted the test just so they could insert these two answers to back up their ideas, Satan's ideas, and it doesn't get much more basic than healing, does it? One of God's names is Yahweh Rafika, the God that heals. Why? Because nobody else can heal. Nobody else can heal. Sheila's sister had a terrible accident about 2-3 years ago now. She jumped down off a boat onto the quay, about 2.5 feet. Her right leg shattered in 10 places. By the time she was finished, we've seen the x-ray, looks like a Meccano set. Bits, just like Meccano, literally, with bolts going through. They bolted it all together again, and she's running around today. Did they heal her? No. They stuck the bones all back in the right place. But the healing was nothing to do with them. Now, many people feel that this attack on the healing doctrine started with Mr. Catch. But it didn't. It actually started much, much earlier. I've got here a co-worker letter, which I would actually urge you to read. And it's the co-worker letter dated June the 8th, 1979. It's on the website. On Get Back on Track under co-worker letters. I'm just going to read a few little excerpts from it. Mr. Armstrong writes, "Dear brethren and co-workers with Christ," and he drops on down and talking about Mr. Ted Armstrong, because this is where the problem actually started. He had, from 1953 and probably more than 10 years, served God's work well, although by 1965 or 1966, it was regretfully necessary for me to correct him for vile conduct unbecoming of a minister. When I knew of my son's sins, I sent him away privately, put him out of the church. I told him to leave Pasadena and to go to a place away and not attend church services. That was in the fall of 1971. All those now working against God's church are trying to destroy it, and like vultures out of the sky, hoping Christ's chosen apostle will die very soon, they're waiting to swoop down and profit themselves on the remains. Isn't that exactly what happened? And he then makes a point. He said, "But this is the work of the living God," in capital letters. They seem to forget that God is in it. And again, he reiterates, "But this is the very work of the living God. Those who dare fight God's work are going to pay a fearful price." He then goes on to go into the systematic theology project, which around the college, those of us who were somewhat against it, used the same letters to say slowly turning Protestant. Because in actual fact, that's what it was. And then the proof of the pudding is in the eating, because the people who are still in the original fellowship have basically become Protestant. In fact, in some ways, they're more Protestant than most Protestants. He then brings out a reason here, and this is why I couldn't get anybody to come and anoint me. "Also, because some ministers," he's got in brackets now, "I believe all of them have been put out of the church, were neglecting prayer in their own lives," he says, as I'm sure Ted also was, "and knew their prayers would not be heard of God, they were terribly embarrassed if asked to pray for and anoint the sick. These ministers have been clamoring for a change in God's church teaching, throwing healing out of the church. The STP obliged them." Yeah? That's right from God's apostle. I just hope that these events help us all to appreciate what we are holding fast to, what we are clinging on to. It's the truth which Jesus Christ revealed to Mr. Armstrong. We got to read Jude 3, haven't we? Just turn to Jude 3 if you want. You probably all know it backwards by now. But Jude 3, it says, "Beloved, When I gave all diligence to write unto you of the common salvation, it was needful to me to write unto you and exhort you that you should earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered unto the saints. And in the Greek there, it should read once and for all delivered to the saints. And verse 4 starts off, for there were certain men crept in unawares. That's the problem. So tomorrow, we'll be sending an alteration through to update on the website to make sure that it's in line with what it should be. But these men that crept in unawares, one of the first things they tackled was healing. That's what they went for. Healing and tithing, actually, was the other one. You don't have to tithe. No. You don't have to tithe. If you don't, then you're not going to get blessed. And so many people went out. The whole work collapsed, basically, because of that. Quite incredible. Turn to 2 Timothy 3, verse 5. 2 Timothy 3, verse 5. Well, verse 1, you know, it says, and know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. Now, there's two ways of looking at this. There's perilous times at the moment in the world, isn't there? If you look at the Middle East, you look at all that's going on there, we could have a war there starting this afternoon, literally. Everything's in place. All the players are ready. It's just a matter of who's going to light the fuse first. It might go on for 6 months. It might last another year before it starts. But we're living in perilous times. We're living in extremely perilous times. This also applies to the church. And when you go on down to verse 5, it's talking about these men, well, verse 4, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying its power. That's the key. That's the key. If we're plumbed into the vine and God's Spirit is working in us and we are close to God, Christ says we can go to the Father and ask him for anything in his name and he will do it. Now, as we know in healing, it might not be done straight away. Although I've seen that happen just in the last few weeks. Within an hour. Pain, gone. It happens. That's God's problem. Our problem is to take it to God and say, you're the only source. You've said to be anointed, I'm going to be anointed. End of story. That's where the faith, that's where the trust needs to be. But these men deny the power. And that's the key. That's the key. So we've got to keep that in mind, especially now as we start looking towards the Passover. Just remember what Christ went through. But just remember something else, and something far, far more important. He's coming back as King of Kings, Lord of Lords. He's going to take over the rulership of this earth, and we get to work under him. That's a fantastic opportunity. But I'll tell you one thing that will exclude us quicker than anything else. If we don't appreciate the power and the majesty that he has, and that he can do whatever we ask him, then we're not going to be there. That's why somebody can steal your crown. They can steal your crown by taking a word out, putting an extra word in, and changing the whole meaning of the truth that we were given. So, let's just keep on hanging in there and holding on tenaciously to what we've been given.